Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. This is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie's Friends. We have a great show for you today. If you haven't already done so, you can download the training notes either at marnie.com at the blog or at Blog Talk Radio, Marnie's Friends. Our guest today is Dr. Keith Marin. He is from California, and he's one of the country's leading experts in the area of leadership, organizational culture, and change. In his heart, he's an organizational consultant committed to helping organizations become leaders in their industry as a result of the quality of their culture and workplace. He's practiced his trade for 30 years, having more experience in helping organizations develop vision, leadership, culture, and change than almost any consultant in the world. He's done extensive research, and he's here to share with us today on the topic, the heart and soul of remarkable leadership. Welcome, Dr. Marin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a delight to be here.
Oh, and I'm so excited to have you here. And you have a book called The Golden Flame. The content of this book is just fascinating. And listeners, if you haven't already gotten that book, you want to check that out too. But during the show today, you're going to help us understand five different key factors to leadership, awareness, sense, examination, assessments, and understanding. And how did you come about beginning to do this research on leadership?
Well, it's actually been a long path for me. In my doctoral research 30 years ago, I was interested in the subject of leadership, and I've been interested ever since. At the time, I was exploring the relationship between ego maturity and leadership effectiveness, believing, and I still do, and I think the research that I did and others bears it out, that there's a direct relationship between people who are mature in terms of their own inner world tend to be more effective in their outer world, particularly in the realms of leadership. So that kind of got me started, and I've been on that path of looking at leaders and helping leaders grow and mature ever since.
Well, I don't take shortcuts in everything I do, but I do like to find the strategic shortcuts that really work. Is there any way to shortcut getting the ego to a place where a person can be a better leader?
Yes, and for a mere $1,000, I'll give you that secret.
Perfect.
For how to shortcut the whole thing.
How awesome.
And I, of course, we all do. It would be wonderful to have that magic pill, but
at least
in the way in which I would define maturity, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. There are ways you can speed it up, though.
Let me define
maturity a little bit, and so that the context of our conversation makes sense. Ego maturity in particular has to do with the maturation of the total self. And so if we think of ourselves as having multiple elements to them, there's our cognitive capability, our thinking capability. There's our heart or our emotional capability. There's our ability to see longer term. There's our ability to see wider and wider variables in any given situation. And there's our sense of justice. Mm-hmm. All of those are parts of who we are. And the totality make up what we might call our worldview or our self. And so maturing that self is a process of maturing all of those elements. So to shift from one place to another in ourself, we'd be literally more able to see wider variables in a situation. Instead of seeing in a narrow way, we might see more systemically. Instead of seeing our own needs or just the needs of the people in front of us, we'd see the needs of many who are related to an effort that we're doing. So maturing the total self is not an overnight thing. It's something that happens over time.
Hmm. Is the first step awareness?
A first step to maturing ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. You know, you'd think off the top of my head I would I'd be able to answer that. I think the first step may be awareness, and it may be that it requires that I want to grow. It may be a desire to grow myself. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, I don't think, when they think of growth, they think about acquiring new information. You know, when they say I'm into personal growth or I'm into growing myself, what they really mean is I'm inquisitive, I read the paper, and I stick more information into my brain. That you could say is growth, but that's not growth in my way of thinking. In my way of thinking, growth, deepening and maturing our full self has to do with stretching the boundaries of how we see. And that requires, I think, a desire, a wanting to grow in that way.
When you were doing your research, what was one of the shockers that occurred along the way for you?
I think the biggest shocker for me, so I, when you say my research, do you mean for the book or my doctoral dissertation?
I'm going to let you choose.
Okay. Well, let me fast forward. So you started with what led me into this, and that was 30 years ago. I've been working with leaders ever since. But if I fast forward, about 5 years ago, I had this sudden realization that even though I had been working with leaders of all different walks of life for many, many years, and a lot of CEOs, a lot of senior executives, I work with them, I coach them, I help them grow, I had the stark realization I had never really worked with or known a great leader in my life. That's what kind of got me on this book. Here I was working with a lot of CEOs, a lot of people who, by many estimations, you might say, no, that's a pretty darn good leader. He or she has got a following. He or she is doing some interesting, good things. But when I looked at what I think of a great leader, and I looked at the people I knew, I the truth was I had not worked with somebody great. And that started me on kind of a bit of an inquiry. So why is that? Is it that there are not that many great leaders out there? Is that I just don't happen to meet with them? Or is it that my standard for what it means to be a great leader is so high, you know, nobody except the second coming of Christ or Mahatma Gandhi would fit, you know, my standard.
Right.
And it's a little bit of all of that. I actually think there are not that many great leaders, and I think my standard is extremely high. But that's what set my research into motion. I decided I wanted to meet some great leaders. I wanted to meet leaders that were extraordinary, who were breaking new grounds in their fields and successfully shifting paradigms in life. And so I reached out to my network and started to find some people. Or I found people who knew people who knew people who were great leaders. And I found a way of getting into them. And I met with 36 extraordinary leaders. It was wonderful. I mean, can you imagine? Just let's say, so here was the bar. You set it this high. You say, I want to find a leader who is breaking new path, who's succeeding, who is inspiring hundreds or thousands of people, who are creating a new paradigm in their field or outside their field, and they're doing it in a soulful way that caused people to go, wow, that's a great leader. Can you imagine meeting with those people every 2 weeks for 2 hours or 3 hours, time and time again for 2 years? That's what I got to do. That was the
research. This is Marnie Swedberg. Our guest today is Dr. Keith Marin, and he is talking to us about the heart and soul of remarkable leaders. He's just been describing how he started down this path. We're going to take a break and come right back and talk about leadership awareness. What do these 36 leaders have in common that we need to understand? We'll be right back. Is it ever your turn to come up with fresh ideas for parties, events, or retreats? Check out the fully developed theme sets at ideasforwomensministry.com. That's ideasforwomensministry.com. Ideas, publicity templates, and more. ideasforwomensministry.com. Welcome back to Marnie's Friends. This is Marnie Swedberg, and I welcome you here today. Hope you're having a great day. We're talking today with Dr. Keith Marin. He is the author of a book called The Golden Flame, in which he describes the leadership attributes of 36 great leaders. He was just before break telling us about having a hard time at first to find great leaders, leaders who were breaking new path, were inspiring thousands of people, were succeeding at what they were doing, were putting forth new paradigms, and were doing it in a soulful way. And he was able to find 36 of these leaders who would talk to him, and he wrote this book, and he's here today to share with us some of the key points. And whether you're a leader of a large group of people or a leader of a small flock of children, you're a leader of somebody, and this can apply to your life. So let's just go back and welcome again Keith. By the way, if you guys want to check out his website, it's over at remarkableleadership.com, remarkableleaders.com. Keith, let's talk about leadership awareness. These 36 leaders that you interviewed, what did you find about that?
Well, you know, I think some of it this is the beautiful, in addition to just being an incredible journey for myself, to be in the presence of these leaders and to feel their weight, their capacity, and this was my intention, I got a chance to find what I believe is the heart and soul of great leadership. And I wasn't looking so much for the characteristics of great leaders, because those characteristics we all kind of know. We know that great leaders have a vision. We know that they're courageous. We know that they have integrity. We know that they're determined. And you and I and just about everybody in the population, if we would ask to describe the traits of great leaders, we'd mention those things. I was kind of interested in a one layer deeper, which is, and maybe it's the deepest layer, I'm not sure, but the question for me was, why is it that some of those qualities show up in some people and not in others? Or put differently, we know so much about great leadership. There are 6,000 books on great leaders, on leadership all over, published in the past 100 years. And why do those qualities rise up and others not? So for me, it was a search to get into their heart and soul and find out what makes them tick, such that they would show up in these wonderful ways. And so I'm going to be long-winded, it appears. I know I'm on radio and I need to be short and pithy, but I'm not very good at short and pithy. So
that's okay.
So there are three fundamental forces that I want to say I saw in these people that I don't think are resident in most of us. But when they're resident, great leadership naturally shows up. And the three are simply what I call an inner compass, anchored to one's values, and a rock-solid sense of self. Now, we'll double-click on those, I hope, and to understand them more fully.
Yeah.
But they're that simply. And let me just speak to those three in a rather clear way. The essence of the message is that outer traits that we see come from an inner solidity. When we are solid inside ourselves, when we are good with ourselves, and when we're clear about who we are and what we bring to the world, and we're good with that, then those characteristics, those traits naturally show up. And so what I saw at its essence were these leaders good with themselves, not trying to pretend something they're not, not boastful, solid with what they do and how they walk in this world. And so there was a certain ease about them. You know, we use the term comfortable in your, you know, this
right.
person's comfortable in their skin.
Right.
That's what we mean. They don't play games. They're not trying to manipulate. They're not trying to get something from you. They simply show up naturally who they are, of course, with a purpose and a clear compass, and then something moves from them. That's the, you know, if we just stop now and you got the message, that would be it. But there's more to it, of course, than that.
Well, let's go back to the first one then, to the inner compass. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so for me, and I imagine the people that are on this radio would probably resonate to some extent with this. An inner compass for me, at its essence, is I know what my purpose is in life.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean I know why I'm here and what I'm here in service to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they go through life, they don't know. They bounce
right.
from job to job, from career to career. They look back on their life at age 65 and they say, oh, that was my career. But it never was necessarily guided by a clear sense of purpose. The leaders that I met all were guided by a clear sense of purpose, and that's what I mean by inner compass. I'll give you an example. One of my favorite was a guy named Chauncey Starr. I met him 3 years ago, 4 years ago. He was a 93-year-old man. He had founded an organization called EPRI, the Electrical Power Research Institute. And I won't go into a lot of detail about EPRI, but suffice it to say that EPRI is a significant player in the electrical utility industry, and it has moved forward and advanced more of the innovations in the electrical utility industry than probably anything else in the world. And I won't go into detail about how he came to this realization, but basically he wanted to create a company that would help move the industry forward. And he was a leader of the green movement before it was even green. And so I met with him 3 years ago, 4 years ago. He's a 93-year-old man at the time, and he was still working full-time.
Mm.
Now, I love that. You got to ask the question, why would somebody at age 93 still be working full-time? I know so many of us have these images of, oh, boy, I can't wait till I'm 65 because then I'll retire, and then I'll live the life I want to live. That's because they're not living a purposeful life, or their work is not purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Chauncey's work was purposeful, and basically I asked a friend of his, why is he working so hard full-time at age 93? And my friend answered, or his friend, a mutual friend, answered, because Chauncey doesn't want to die until he solves the energy crisis on the planet.
Hmm. Hmm.
That's a man with a purpose. That's why he's working full-time at age 93.
Hmm.
When I say purpose, that's what I mean. Not, you know, I'm just trying to make a bunch of money or I'm just trying to do good, you know, achieve certain goals. Those are ambitions. Those are personal ambitions. When I say purpose, is that I'm guided by something far deeper than me that's not personal to me. It's in service to something that's of value to the world, and that is why I do my work. It's from that sense of purpose that vision naturally shows up. It doesn't show up by reading a book. You can't pick up my book and all of a sudden get vision. Because vision doesn't come from reading a book or from having a cognitive insight. It comes from deep within.
Hmm.
Am I making sense?
Absolutely. And I do have a question about it.
Sure.
When you were doing your research, did you find that there was any similarity between the leaders as far as when they understood their vision or reason for existence? Conscious search for it, or did you go there at all?
I didn't, although I can answer that question not from within the research, but from within my work, because I work with tons of people helping them find it. And I don't think that there's a paint-by-the-numbers approach here at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, like myself, it's had it gifted to me.
Mm.
Me, even though I wasn't searching.
Mm.
And this happened when I was 23. It was like a lightning bolt that hit me that I went, oh, my God, I know what my purpose is in this world. And for some, it's like that. It's literally like a gift, and it becomes a calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a calling in the secular world Somebody once said that a calling is where our greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. In the religious world or in the Christian world, a calling is somebody who's following God's glory or God's guidance. But in the secular world, some people have a calling too. And that calling is my greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. And it's sometimes like a lightning bolt, it hits us. And I had the good fortune of that happening. For others, they struggle. They know they're missing that inner element, and they can't find it. And for those, they need guidance. And sometimes the search can take a few weeks or a few hours. Sometimes it takes a few years. But I will tell you that that search is a worthy search, because when you find your deeper sense of purpose, things clear up very naturally. Choices become easier. You know, I can sift through my own inner world. When I'm faced with an opportunity, I simply pass it through my sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And if it fits, then I'm interested. And if it doesn't, I'm not interested. But a lot of people, when they're making a decision about whether to do XYZ activity, they run it through their goals, their ambitions, their needs, and it becomes very unclear whether or not I should do this or not. People with a clear sense of purpose, it's very clear and very simple.
It's real interesting, Keith. You said yours came to you, yours was gifted to you. Mine was also gifted to me in my early 30s. I just one day was working in the kitchen and understood clearly that I existed for three purposes, and that was that. I actually didn't know what it was at the time. I just understood it was important, and I wrote it on a 3x5 recipe card and stuck it on my cupboard, and I kept looking at it thinking, I wonder what that's about. And it wasn't until years later that I understood it was, oh, it's a vision, it's a mission, I see. But, you know, since then I've taken so many groups through this mission vision training too, and it is truly amazing what happens inside of a heart, inside of a person, when they recognize this is truly, I am unique in the world, all these other people around me, and listen to how mine is different. What I'm coming to here in my heart, it's so different from everybody else's. It's very unique, and it's resonating as true for me. And it's just amazing to me and for listeners. Matt, if you have not gone through Vision Mission Training, go through it. Now, we've got some over at Marnie.com. Keith, do you guys do that at your site too? Do you offer something like that?
I do not offer it explicitly, even though I have a group that I meet with, that I work with, and I'm certainly available. I've been doing that work for years, but I don't hang out my shingle as purpose work.
There, right. Right.
But it's certainly a deep part of who I am and what I do.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I was working with a regional director recently. I did an expo for a regional library system here, and she asked me straight out, she said, how can you be so focused?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's because I know exactly what I'm here to do.
Yes.
Where's the lack of focus?
and exactly. So focus is one of those things that the outer form that we look at leaders and we say, oh, there's a leader who's focused. I want that. I want to be a great leader. Great leaders have focus, so give me focus. Well, focus comes from a deeper place, true focus. Mm. And it's that easy. You're exactly right.
Mm. So we're talking today with Dr. Keith Moran. He's the author of The Golden Flame. His website is remarkableleaders.com. We're going to come back and talk about more about this heart and soul of remarkable leadership. We're going to talk about how a great leader has becomes anchored or is anchored to their own values. We will be right back. Are you a leader, an author or speaker, a mom or Sunday school teacher? Leadership Club is my way of providing encouragement, practical help, and solid God focus to as many people as I possibly can. Together we are learning how to be all that Christ created us to be, in and through His power and presence in our lives. I encourage you to join us at Marnie.com. Have a great day. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Marnie's Friends. My friend on the line with me today is Dr. Keith Moran. He is the author of The Golden Flame. His work has positively impacted companies like Hewlett-Packard, Freddie Mac, America Group Corporation, Medcath, Wang Laboratories, and so many more, over 200 other companies and organizations. He has spent 25 years of experience assisting executives and managers in business, government, and education, and he's here today sharing with us the heart and soul of remarkable leadership. Just before break, we were talking about the inner compass, that remarkable leaders have an inner compass that's directing them, that's helping them. You know, when you think about the compass, it's such a powerful word, because what it does is when you can't see a single thing, the compass gets you back on track.
Yes.
Yeah.
It
I always
is,
say, in fact, just earlier this morning, I wrote, I do social networking, and I ping it out there to Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all that. Just this morning, and on a lot of my sites, I often say, confused again, but not for long.
Yeah.
So, you know, we frequently get a little turned around, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Although less and less so in my life as the more I have that compass to guide me. It's amazing just how easy life is from that place.
Mm.
Even though I recognize people struggle to find that compass.
Mm. The other the second point that you mentioned earlier was that remarkable leaders are anchored to their own values.
Yes. This is going to come as no great insight necessarily, although the way I speak about it in the book and the way I want to speak about it here may be a unique spin on it. I want to make the distinction between having our values and being our values.
Mm.
It's the difference that makes a difference. So many of us talk about values as if it's a choice, values that we have, and then we make a choice relative to it. An example might be, I'm upset with my boss who did something, and now I need to decide, well, am I going to tell the truth and confront my boss or not? Well, if I confront my boss, I know I'm telling the truth, and that's what my integrity tells me and my values tell me, but I may run the risk that he or she won't like it, and they might be upset with me, and they might fire me. So I'm making a choice here. Do I tell the truth or not? People, and so many of us, this is true, we're relating to our values as something that we have. And when you have something, it's external to you. It's outside, like you're holding it in your hand. Oh, there's my value. And in fact, you probably, you know, you can even imagine the imagery of weighing two different things. Do I do this or not? You're weighing it in your hands. You're looking at those things outside yourself, weighing one against the other, and then deciding, do I act in integrity or not? Most of us have values. We can list them. We can reference them. We can, with pride, mention these things. It could be a value of excellence. It could be a value of faith. It could be a value of love. We all have that. But there's a difference between having and choosing relative to those things that these things that we have, and being our values. And I will say, without equivocation, that these leaders acted from the world not like their values were outside, but they are already inside. And therefore, the things that look like choices are not choices. I'll give you an example that I think is quite dramatic, but is telling. One of the people I met, whose name I'm not going to mention, he had an ambition for most of his adult life to become the CEO of a large corporation. He was working in a medical industry, a related industry, and he was moving up the corporate ranks, much like one does when one has an ambition to move up to become CEO. And after about 15 years in a company, it's somewhere in his late 30s or around 40 years old, he was basically given the keys to the kingdom and said, the CEO said, I want to promote you to president of it's a $2 or $3 billion company, and I'm going to be stepping down within a year, and I want you are my heir apparent, and will you take the role? Now, this was his dream. This was the guy's thing that he'd been working with before. He had images of himself as CEO, and they were power images. They were images for his own ambitions and also images for what he wanted to do with the world. But there was a catch. By the way, he was offered basically the role. He would be paid, I don't know, $2, $3 million a year, plus the equivalent of a signing bonus, the total of which, it totaled up to over $10 million of an offer.
Hmm.
He turned it down. There was something that the CEO was asking of him that was incompatible with his values, and he didn't stutter step at all. He said, I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm grateful for the offer. I say no. I do not accept, because what you're asking me is incompatible with my values. It wasn't a choice for him in the way in which we often think about choices. It was a no-brainer. And he walked away comfortably, even though there was a huge loss for him. In some way, it was not a loss. It was a very clear decision. When I say anchored in one's values, that's what I mean. I am my values.
A great leader, a person who is anchored in their values, do you find that they progress through life with far less regrets than someone who is just moving through life?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, much like an inner compass, life becomes easier. Now, it's challenging when I'm faced with a choice and my values conflict with one another.
Mm.
But then my job is to struggle to find a solution that successfully cares for both of those values. What if I care about love and excellence, for example, and my child is demonstrating things that are clearly sloppy, and he or she's lazy, and what do? I love the person, but they're not doing excellent work. Or a member of my team that works for me, they're not doing excellent work, but I'm not going to berate them with it. I've got to find a way of holding that value of excellence and love simultaneously as I talk to that worker or myself or my child. That's what they do. Even though they may be potentially conflicting, they find ways of bringing it together. So it's not necessarily easy,
mm-hmm.
but it's clear.
Mm. The other thing that you said earlier is that they were rock solid in themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think of there being two components to that. One is I know who I am, and the second component is I'm good with who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps to separate both of those a little bit, but they come together very naturally. It is possible to know oneself but not be good with oneself.
Mm.
It's hard to be good with oneself without knowing oneself, but let's separate them. So I know who I am, which means at the most surface basic level, I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not so good at.
Mm-hmm.
I have strengths in some areas and weaknesses in others. And so a leader or any person who knows what they're good at, what they're not, will likely surround themselves with people who do things that are better than them in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard, we all know about the value of delegating and leaders delegate. Well, not necessarily true. Some leaders don't delegate because they're afraid that if I delegate this project to somebody else, they'll show me up.
Mm.
Or I think I know what I'm doing, when in fact I really don't. So they're pretty clear about their skills. At a deeper level, they know their purpose. They know what they're here to do. They know their added value. They know their strengths. They know what they're about, and they follow that. So there's a lot of room for people who are very different. I know, and you know, and we all know that there's no way I can do everything in an organization. I'm not capable. In fact, the bigger the organization, the more I've got to hire people with a wide variety of skills. So there's just no way I'm strong in everything. Therefore, my job as a leader is not to pretend that I'm strong in everything, but instead to surround my people who have strengths and can fill in lots of things that I can't possibly do. That's the surface basic level of it. And diversity naturally shows up when a leader knows their strengths and knows their weaknesses. They surround themselves with others. Mm-hmm. It's the weak leader or the poor leader who thinks or needs to think they're good at everything. You know, they become a know-it-all. And they become kind of annoying, actually. it's kind of a pain in the butt to work with somebody who thinks they are good at everything. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. So they've done some self-inquiry. They've done a strength finder process, or they've over time looked at the areas that they're good at. They've cultivated certain areas, and they're at peace with other people being good. So that's the I'm good with myself. I know who I am. I know who I'm not. I'm a marketing person. I know I'm a very gregarious and sales-oriented. I'm not good at dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Right.
So I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I've got to be detail-oriented. I will fail.
Right.
Or vice versa. I'm very detail-oriented, but I'm not very vision-oriented. I'm a good follower. I'm not a good leader. Like that. The second half is I'm good with myself, and this is the hardest to come by. It's self-esteem on steroids. You know, when I'm good with myself, I'm at peace with my strengths, and I'm mostly at peace with my weaknesses.
Mm.
I don't have to, with bravado, prove to the world how wonderful I am, because I already get that I'm good inside. And if I get I'm good inside, there's nothing to prove, nothing to shout. And a lot of these leaders I met were amazingly humble because they were good with themselves. I'll give you an example. A guy by the name of Banis Hudson, he helped take Lens Crafters, which is a company that sells eyeglasses, and probably just about everybody on the call has heard of Lens Crafters. When Lens Crafters was only 9 stores in a particular region, he was hired as CEO, and he took it from 9 to 100 stores and became a national brand. And then he took over the parent company, and he became CEO of the parent company. And then he left and later became CEO of a company called Bevmo. So Bevmo, he turned around from a company that was close to bankrupt to now a significant success story. Wonderful leader. He invites me to meet with him, and most people would expect a leader of a $100 million or $500 million company is going to have this big office, big desk, beautiful cherry desk, plaques all over the walls. I ring the doorbell of his office. Instead of having his assistant greet me, I don't even think he has an assistant. He just greeted me. He says, "Hi, Keith, nice to meet you. Can I get you something to drink?" He escorts me into his office, and his office is this small 10x10 little office, like a tiny bedroom size. And it was as austere as you can imagine. Here's this guy I'm sure is earning, you know, $2 million a year, could have all kinds of, you've probably walked in the offices of a CEO who's enamored with himself. They'll have the plaques. They'll have the picture of the President of the United States with the hands over the shoulders and signed by the President, where you can't tell if it was real or if the picture was cut into it. You know, all these things that are showy.
Yeah.
Let me show you how wonderful I am.
Hmm.
This guy's office was the opposite. And so many of the leaders I met were like that. So unostentatious, and
humble.
He was quiet. Yeah, thank you. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not. I'm not so good at finding the right words, but Marty is.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, exactly. So, he was so quiet, so soft-spoken, as were so many of these leaders. It's the opposite of the charismatic. I'm going to motivate you to success. He really had a beautiful, quiet demeanor that said, I'm good with who I am, and there's nothing to shout at. That's what I mean. That's how it shows up.
Was that characteristic of the most remarkable leaders, is that they did not really have that salesy, charismatic side to them?
With the exception of a few, yes, that's correct. Or what they were selling wasn't themselves. In other words, they may have had a personality that was promote-y-like, you know, but they're not promoting themselves. Here, I'll give you another example that was very telling, and it was wonderful. I would show up and say, you know, so-and-so had met with me and said you were quite a wonderful leader, and I wanted to get to know you and find out what makes you such a great leader. Almost all of them said, wait a sec, before we get started here, I want you to know I'm not so sure I'm a leader. And I'm not so sure I'm that wonderful. I don't think of myself that way.
Interesting.
And being a leader isn't that important to me. Now, that's kind of shocking
in and of itself.
Because you would expect, we see so many people who are in leadership positions that got there because of their ambition and because of their showiness, and these leaders got there, they're almost like reluctant leaders because they didn't aspire to it for their own ambitions, and there was nothing in them that needed to prove to the world how wonderful they are. So they got to the leadership position for a different reason. Almost all of them said that. They said, I'm not so sure I'm that great, and I'm learning this, and I'm trying on that, and I'm doing the best I can, and I'm happy to tell you my story, Keith, and really grateful that you're here. That was the spirit for 90% of them.
Wow. Well, yeah. This is Marty Swedberg. Our guest today is Dr. Keith Moran. He is the author of a book called The Golden Flame. You want to check that out. His website is remarkableleaders.com. We're going to come back right after this last break and talk about the five keys leadership success. We'll be right back. Are you registered to receive the Marnie Minute? Have you sometimes missed out on training or connection opportunities because you didn't know about them in advance? Visit Marnie.com and select free updates to receive email notifications so you will never miss a beat. That's free updates over at Marnie.com. Welcome back to Marnie's Friends. I am so glad that you are here with us today, and we are having it's a delightful and profound conversation about the heart and soul of remarkable leadership. Dr. Marin, our guest, has interviewed, I'm sure hundreds, but for his book, 36 Remarkable Leaders, for the book The Golden Flame. And he's been sharing with us what these leaders had in common, and it goes deeper than just external character qualities. It goes much deeper than that. In Keith's work, he's designed and led over 100 seminars and workshops for leaders. He's helped create some of the most innovative leadership training programs in the country. His style is direct, honest, and supportive, and he's noted for his ability to create memorable learning experiences that have a lasting effect. And I'm so grateful that you are here with us today, Keith. Thank you so much for joining us for that exact purpose.
My pleasure.
When we say there are five keys to leadership success, and we've listed them here, awareness, sense, examination, assessments, and understanding. Now, five keys makes it sound like you just stick the key in the door and you turn the lock, and then you're a fantastic leader.
But
it's not quite like that.
Not at all. And I'm not sure these are the five keys to success. It's more five things that I would hope people take away from this talk with you.
Let's go through them. Leadership awareness. What is it?
Let's assume for a moment that you and others on the phone aspire to be a greater leader, aspire to be a better leader. I think it starts with awareness that the path to becoming a great leader is an inner journey. And if there was no other point other than that, I'd be happy to drill that point home time and time again.
Mm.
So many of the books out there I think it's, you know what I think it started with? I think it started with Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. So he writes this book, and it was a huge success. So this is the one habit of a highly successful author is to write seven habits on the title. So this book comes out. This book comes out, and people go, oh, wow, the seven six secrets. And they're secret, too. That's kind of cool. I'm going to be let in on the secret that no one else knows. Well, no one else except the 5 million other people who buy the book. So there's a certain, how would I put it? There's a certain marketing thing that's going on in the leadership space in the self-help world as well, where if we put the five keys or the seven habits or the six steps to on the title, people gobble it up. Oh, boy, I want that. But as you said at the beginning, you know, can you give me the key and the magic pill that I take? Mm-hmm. I can't. And I think the first step is to be aware there's no magic pill. There are not five steps. There are not four secrets. But there is a principle, and the principle is that great leadership comes from solidity from inside, and you can't get there without a heroic journey, without an exploration of your inner self. And you know, there are lots of different ways of exploring the inner self, but I don't want to teach the five steps.
As I'm listening to you, I'm drawing a parallel in my mind, because I feel like what happens with a lot of people who pursue a relationship with God is, and you hear it in a lot of sermons too. A lot of Christian books do the same thing. What is easier for us? What we want is we want a list. We want to just have a list. If I do these 10 commandments, or if I do these certain things, then I'm good with God. I'm good, I'm okay. And it's kind of what we want with ourselves, too. If I go through the seven steps of successful leaders, I'll become a successful leader. But it's really so much more complex than that, because what we're working with is a person. It's not an inanimate object. And it's changing. It's moving. What is okay today in the relationship, tomorrow may change. The requirements may change. What's being demanded of you, what's being expected of you, either by yourself or of God. And it's very similar in that we want a list. it makes it something our brain can get around, and we can say there's an end in sight. But in relationship, there really isn't. It's always a journey, isn't it?
Yes. That. Well, you got it. So I have one satisfied listener.
One raving fan.
We're done. The rest of people can go. You and I have it. We're clear.
Oh, no. We have four more. We have four more keys. We got to get people.
Well,
so
sort of keys, but at least key takeaways. They're not the five steps. It's more just things I hope people leave with.
Right.
Yeah. So let's.
What is leadership? What is leadership sense then? Okay, we know what common sense is. What is leadership sense?
Well, I think the second one is I would want people to have a clear sense of what they need to do to improve, and so. So for me, I would love it if people ask me, so what can I do to improve? The answer would be go within and get clear about what is your purpose. What are the values that so live within you that you will not move from? And what are your strengths and weaknesses? And you get clear of those three things and be at peace with yourself, you will automatically improve. Mm. So it's a sense of those three things that I started out the talk with.
Mm. And is that the same then as examination, where you are really – I have to tell you, I'm just right now going through – I was talking to my girlfriend the other day, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm exhausted. I'm laying on my bed because I'm working through with a coach, I'm working through what it is that enables me to be me. What is it that I do every day when I get up? The number one question I get asked, Keith, all the time is, how do you get so much done?
Yeah.
And because I tend to appear to be a, you know, major multitasker, but of course the recent modern research tells us that's not exactly what's happening. There's some different things happening. We've been looking deep inside at what it is that happens inside of me subconsciously that
mm-hmm.
causes me to be able to externalize behaviors that other people find attractive, is the best way to say it. They would like also to be able to get more done. How is it that I do that? This has been an incredible journey, very difficult as far as trying to get myself to be quiet long enough to see it, but it's a deep self-examination and fascinating results in that there truly is a subconscious process that's happening inside of my head, very quickly, but inside of my head as I make decisions, as I juggle back and forth between different tasks, and it is all about going deep inside.
Yeah. So I think that's right. And so the examination of the areas where one is uncertain, that third thing that I hope people walk away with is, so if you were to ask me, how would I find places where I'm off as a leader? I would say, well, one of the places you can look is where you're feeling uncertain. Now, I get that we all feel uncertain at different times in our lives. But there's an uncertainty that has me get crippled and stuck and immoved, and there's an uncertainty that I can flow through. Uncertainty becomes an indicator that something is not rock solid inside. Because as we talked about earlier, when you're clear about your purpose and rock solid with your value, anchored in your values and rock solid with yourself, things flow easily. So when they're not flowing easily and there's an uncertainty or a confusion, that's a portal to discovering a deeper opportunity. And that's what I'm inviting is. So if I'm fearful,
right,
uncertain, confused, go into that place.
Right.
Don't run away from the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to cover it up and pretend it's not there. Actually go in and examine it. Be curious about it. Wonder what's the deeper fear underneath that fear and what's underneath that deeper fear. And at some level, we'll hit rock bottom and we'll go, ah, the fear is I have an unhealed part of myself and I need to heal it. Or I have an uncertainty at the deepest level of my soul and I need to clear it up. So that's what I mean by use uncertainty or use fear as a portal.
Yeah, huge, just absolutely huge. And I was talking earlier to a different friend I was talking to today, and I said, in this particular area in my life, I'm so unclear. I feel very, very unsure. Just exactly what you're talking about. And her response to me was, well, you know what to do when you're there. You're good at doing that. You get quiet, you go deep, you ask Jesus what's going on, and you figure it out with Jesus, and then you keep walking one step at a time, and that's all we ever need to really know. Leadership assessments, what do you recommend there? What are they? What do you...
Yeah, so this fourth thing, I'm not sure, I don't know how relevant this is for the people in the audience. By the way, let's step back for a minute. When I say leadership, everybody has the possibility
right,
of expressing leadership. It's,
mm-hmm.
It is true that we talk about leaders as a role,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not talking about the role of leader. I'm talking
everybody's
about the
leader.
Spirit of leadership
mm-hmm.
that lives within
right.
all of us.
Mm-hmm.
By me talking with the CEOs or the leaders of companies, I got to amplify that phenomenon of leadership, but I believe
right.
it's everywhere. It's resonant mm-hmm. in all of us at any given moment. Leader of a family,
mm-hmm.
bring leadership to one's group. You can be you can be a person who's sweeping the floors of your company and bring extraordinary leadership by what you embody. If you embody these three characteristics, leadership will show up. So the question that I wanted to offer, at least those people in a position to hire others, if you're looking to hire others who are leaders, how would you know if they were there? And the simple answer is you would look not so much in their qualifications on their resume, you would look in how they show up with you in an interview. I had a beautiful little example of this yesterday with a client. We just kind of tripped on it. I was in the client conference room. I was working with his executive team, and I poured some water in a glass, and the shape of the pitcher was didn't make it easy for me to pour the water without spilling it.
No,
the ice cubes, the ice cubes in the pitcher somehow conspired, and my poor ability to pour water spilled water all over. And I thought to myself, "Oh, that's interesting. What if, in an interview process, where you're hiring somebody, what if you had a pitcher that was designed to spill water, and you ask them to pour the water? You know, hey, would you help yourself to some water?" They help themselves some water, and it spills all over the place. It spills on there, and now they're embarrassed. How they respond in that moment will tell you a lot about who they are. If they blame the pitcher, as I did, or they blame the water or the ice cubes, or they blame the setting, or they mentioned they were embarrassed 25 times, like they over-apologized, you probably have somebody who's not rock solid with themselves. On the other hand, if they say, oops, sorry about that, does anybody have a napkin here that I can clean?
Right.
And they make no big deal about it.
Right.
And they realize that their success is not based on their ability to pour the pitcher of water, you know.
Right.
Then you probably have somebody who's a little more solid in themselves. So I started to think about what are some clever ways you could test if somebody is rock solid with himself. You can't find it in the words on the page, and it's often not found in an interview, but what you can do is offer them feedback and watch how they respond. Offer them corrective feedback and watch how they respond. If they respond with a thank you, they're probably pretty rock solid. If they respond with defensiveness, they're probably not rock solid in themselves. So that's what I mean by that issue of how would you know it in others? You can't find it on the page, but you can feel it. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And
we're
know
just
we're
about
out of time. So.
We are, and we have one more leadership or understanding of leadership. What? Just take us there for a minute.
Sure. Just briefly. So, I believe that great leaders also encourage leadership in others. And so if I am a person who's gobbling up power and control, then I'm probably not going to be a great leader. If I'm a person who is sharing responsibility, encouraging others to step up, feeling joy in their success, then now I may have the possibility of being a great leader.
Well, there are tears in my eyes as you say that last one, as sure as my heart, and I know it is yours too.
Yeah,
really cool. This is Marnie Swedberg. I've been interviewing a new friend who I value greatly already after just 1 hour. Sorry, I got kind of choked up there at the end here. But, you know, talking about leadership values and leaders and what makes a great leader, it is my heart. It is my heart. And, Keith, I know it is yours too, to help other people get from where they are to the best leader they can be, whatever level that is, whatever God put inside of them as potential. And your book, The Golden Flame, can help with that. Everybody go check out Keith's website over at remarkableleaders.com. Keith, this hour has flown by. I have learned so much. I'm so, so grateful that you took time out of your day to join us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I just want to point out to those tears, that's what it's like when you know your purpose. Then when you're touched, tears naturally flow.
Right.
It's tears.
And I'm
of
so,
joy.
So sorry. I'm so, so sorry. And I think that I'm crying because something went wrong here in this room. No, I'm crying with my tears. It was a test, wasn't it?
It was a test. You did great. You failed. Beautiful.
Oh, failed beautifully. I love it. Falling forward. Well, thank you for being here. Thank you, Keith, for being here. I'm so grateful. Thank you, listeners, for being here. We wouldn't have a show without you, and I hope you have a fantastic day and a great week. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.